speak to the person that you're speaking to the way they need to be spoken to, not the way you need to. Because if you're talking to you, what effect are you having over there? None. But people aren't trained. We don't teach our children. We don't teach them how even to think about this. And it's easy, you know. When my grandson was little, he threw a hissy fit one day. He's laying on the kitchen floor, kicking and screaming and carrying on. And I just was watching this and making cookies. And, you know, finally he tired himself out. And I looked down at him and he's, you know, red in the face and he's been crying and he's been pounding the floor. And I said to him, "What was going on down there? That didn't look like it was fun." He said, "Wasn't." I said, "Well, why were you doing it?" "I was mad." I said, "Oh." I said, "Did that help?" He said, "No." I said, "Well, the next time you get mad," I said, "why don't you tell me what you're mad about? Maybe we can do something about that. And you won't have to go through that horrible little whatever that was, because it didn't look like fun." That's what learning something like neuro-linguistic programming can do for you. Learning communication styles, learning that, you know, interrupting somebody having a temper tantrum, just like an adult who's having road rage. You know how old that adult is because you think to yourself, "Oh my God, he's acting like a 5-year-old. What happened to him at five that had him respond this way as an adult? Something happened. And now he's trapped in that emotional outburst." Well, if you don't know any of these things, then your first reaction is to get defensive. And defensive just creates more what? More violence. If you don't get defensive, you look at them and think, "Man, you know, whatever's going on there, it doesn't look like fun. Are you okay?" You suddenly diffuse the whole situation. Because rather than getting into it with that person, you've actually had them stop and think, "What is going on over here?"
I have a friend who she used to be a university professor at Columbia in New York City, and she would like to see the education system changed. As you're talking about this, I think this is key to changing education. But how do we get this kind of information to teachers so that we can start to change the environment where children are constantly having access to violent video games? Because it is, some days it's constant for these children.
Honestly, I don't know the answer to that. If I did, I'll tell you I'd be taking care of it. Because there's more than one layer here. It's more than the education system. It's more than parental supervision. It's more it's endemic to the entire societal structure. And where do you start with that? Well, in my opinion, you start with the kids. And that's not so easy to do. I mean, I was invited one time to a high school psychology class. And about 3 days before the class, and I was surprised because the school system doesn't welcome people who talk about things like hypnotherapy and may even give a demonstration. I was quite surprised. And about 2 days before I was to go for this class, I was phoned and told that the school had decided it wasn't a good idea and we shouldn't do it. So when you're looking at the school system, you have to look at the entire structure. And the problem is that I think our school system has become more about politics than education. You know, once upon a time, we in the school system gave children the tools that they needed and the information that they needed to learn to be self-sufficient. We don't do that anymore. Now we don't even give them marks because it might hurt their feelings. Well, life is not really a bowl of cherries. There's pits. And you're going to run into some of those pits and you're going to have to deal with them. How you choose to deal with them, I mean, makes all the difference in your world. If all you see are the pits, then you're going to have a kind of unhappy life. But that's your perspective, and everything in life is perspective. I think there's a lot of children who are diagnosed as ADHD who are just active kids. And I think that the systems in place don't train people properly to handle them. My daughter was hyperactive, and that's why I say this, because I can remember being told, and she's like 45 years old now. I can remember being told when she was two that she needed to go on medication and that she should be on medication until we could talk to her, which I thought was pretty ridiculous, because if I can't talk to her right now, then when can I? And then I was told that when I talk to her, I should tell her that when she's having a bad day, she should take her medication, which to me sounded like teaching her to be a drug addict. If you can't handle things, take a pill, smoke a joint, And of course, people thought it was crazy. Well, the doctor thought it was crazy. And I thought, first of all, on these drugs, she's a zombie. She's not normal. And secondly, I don't know that this is the best way to handle it. So I changed her entire diet and put her on mega vitamins and under the care of another doctor. And in 2 weeks, she was like a perfectly normal little girl. What
Amazing.
I taught her to do, because she ate sugar, she ate raisins, grapes, or cheddar cheese, orange or dyes, that kind of thing. She just went up the wall. Her energy level was beyond ridiculous, and it would take her 2 or 3 days to come down. And so if she would eat something, she would either get a migraine headache or she'd start to behave like that. So I had to say to her, "What'd you eat?" "Oh, I didn't eat anything." "Yes, she did. What did you eat?" And then, of course, she'd tell me, and I'd say, "Well, now you need to go to your room. You need to stay there until you get control of yourself." And when she'd get a migraine, I'd say, "Now you need to go to your room, turn out the lights, close the door till the headache goes away. Because you put that in your mouth, this is the result of that." Well, she quickly learned not to do that kind of stuff, because the result wasn't very nice and she didn't like it. Now, I don't know, maybe some people think that's mean, but she's 45 years old and she's functioning just fine in the world. So yeah, I think that there's a lot of things going on in our society now which are distractive, trying to distract people from what's going on rather than deal with it. And if you don't deal with whatever your stuff is, then it will come back to bite you and it will make your life miserable when you could have a much better life. And hypnosis, in many ways, can help a lot of people who are in that kind of situation just by teaching them how to relax. I one time worked with a little boy who was about 8 years old, and his parents had gotten divorced, and he had a new little sister and new family, and he was very destructive at school. He was causing a lot of problems, and it took us about 4 sessions of hypnosis. He stopped doing it.
What do you think the cause was?
Well, for him, it was there were several things, and I won't get into them all because that's
Right.
private information. However, there were several things that had happened in his life, not just the parents breaking up and new family. I mean, all those things have play a part, but it was his insecurity or his fear of not being good enough. Whatever the fear is, whatever the feeling is, and it can be anything, that's what will drive the behavior. So once you can reframe those for them, and they can see that, in the case of a child, sometimes they just need to see that their parents still love them.
It's real practical. It's really simple when it comes
Yeah,
down to it.
it is. It is, but we often don't take the time to find out what that person's feeling is. As parents, and I mean, I did the same thing myself before I knew better. By then it was too late for my kids, but better for my grandkids. If we don't know how to deal with these things, then what do? We tell them not to behave that way. We punish them, but punishment rarely does anything because you haven't dealt with the issue. You're dealing with the symptom. It's just like modern medicine. I mean, there are some wonderful things in modern medicine, but often they deal with the symptom rather than the cause. And until you deal with the cause, the symptom will persist.
And if you're constantly looking at the symptom, often doctors will go to medication.
Exactly. That's what I mean by treating the symptom.
Right.
And often they use medication, and you can't fault them. They don't take a whole lot of training when it comes to this kind of stuff either. I mean, the course that I took, the number of hours that I put in for that course, are the same number of hours that you put in for 4 years of university.
Really? So tell me a little bit more about your course. How long was it?
Well, it was 9 months. I did 1 weekend a month, and then we did practicums. So I would do two practicums a week the whole 9 months. So with each step of the way, because there's three different steps. First, you become a hypnotist, then you become a master hypnotist, then you become a hypnotherapist. And each one of them entails a whole lot of different stuff. So if someone tells you they're a hypnotist, then basically they can put you into hypnosis and then give you some direct suggestion. And hopefully that person is good enough with language that they're giving you suggestions that are really positive, because the way you word things can sound positive and not necessarily be so. So if you're dealing with a hypnotist, you're dealing with kind of the first level. And then a master hypnotist has some more tools and skills, and can work with interactive therapy. When you become a hypnotherapist, you can work with multiple different interactive therapies. I use things like regression, I use parts, and I use timeline. Parts is interesting because if you come without an emotion, then the way for me to get to whatever is going on is that there's a part of your subconscious mind, or if you will, a part of your personality that has you behave in a certain way. There's also an opposite part that wants you to do something different, and that's why you're there to see me, is because there's this conflict going on. So when I do parts, I put you into hypnosis, and then I ask that part to come forward and have a discussion with me. And normally that part will, because the reason you're here is because you're in conflict and it's your subconscious mind telling you it's time to do something here. And then I work with that part, and it's literally negotiating. I negotiate with that part. Why is it doing what it's doing? How long has it been doing it for you? Once I find that out, then I can ask that part to look at you now as you are. I mean, if that part's been around since you were 5 years old, well, that part behaves like a 5-year-old. So it looks at now who you are and what you've become. And you ask that part basically, so are you serving this person? And they'll say no. And you say, well, what could you do? Because you don't take anything away without giving something back. So when I talk to that part, I actually literally negotiate with the part so that it takes on a new job. And that job is to support where you're at now. And that's what it will do. And so that issue that you have disappears. Or if it's an extreme issue of trauma, physical, emotional, sexual, then I will use timeline. And timeline has you float above where you are in your life right now. Just imagine that you float above, and it puts a protective layer of plexiglass between where you are floating above and where your life is below, and then as you float back as far back in time as you need to go to whatever incident created the problem in the first place. But it's a way of having you removed from the emotion, because some people can't deal with the emotion. It's too much. So there's several different ways to work with hypnosis, and that's what you learn when you do clinical hypnotherapy. And it's a lot of theory and a lot of practice. So every class, there was 4 hours of theory and 4 hours of practice. And then between classes, we did two sessions a week with each other so that we got to practice and practice and practice and discover as much as we could about how different it is with each and every person, because no two people are the same. So when you go into a hypnotherapy session as a practitioner, I have an idea of what I might expect. But in all honesty, I have no idea what's going to happen until you're there in the chair and you take me on the journey. And then we resolve whatever your issue is with the tools that you have. But it's quite involved, a process. So you want to make sure that when you choose a hypnotherapist, that you choose somebody who's done as much training as possible. And then to continue with my membership in the IMDHA, I have to do several hours of work every year, to continue training.
Wow, amazing. Jackie, I mean, I've known you for a few years and I've talked with you before, but just hearing the depth of what it entails to be a hypnotherapist and about the process is just it's very fascinating. We need to start winding down. So I wanted to ask you, what would you say is the thing about this profession that you find most inspiring?
The transformation of people before your eyes. I mean, when people come to see me, usually they're pretty upset, pretty anxious. They're not very happy. And when we work together and get to that point where they reframe whatever it is they need to reframe, they literally transform in front of your eyes. I mean, their whole body changes, it relaxes. Sometimes it's like they get a glow about them. And you know that when they come out of hypnosis and they kind of breathe this huge sigh of relief, their whole life has changed for the better. And they go out and do things that just amaze you. And every single client that I have ever had has given me some kind of a gift, because everybody has a gift. And sometimes we just don't know what our own gift is. And it's right there in your subconscious mind for you to find. Sometimes you just need a little guidance to get there. That's what keeps me doing this. It's just, I mean, you just feel wonderful at the end of the session. I do. And I know that my clients feel good. And that's the whole intention, is to get them to a place in their lives where they're living the life they want to live.
I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. But first, before we say goodbye, can you tell listeners at home how can they contact you? And also, what is your web page information?
Okay. Well, my web page is www.trilogichypnosis.com. You can contact me by phone, either text or phone me at 604-786-1589. I do a lot of my work now with Zoom online, which is amazing because I can work with anybody from anywhere. Or you can look online at the IMDHA and you can look up my profile on their site.
Excellent. Well, Jackie, thank you so much. And I look forward to talking with you again real soon.
Well, thank you, Elaine. This has been most amazing and I've enjoyed every moment of it.
sticks and stones together make a spark ignite. And the thought of rubbing new is getting so exciting. Sky rockets in flight. Afternoon delight. Afternoon delight. Afternoon delight. Afternoon delight. Afternoon delight.
And that was the American pop band Starland Vocal Band with their signature tune Afternoon Delight, which was released in 1976 and became one of the biggest selling singles of that year. The band was together for 5 years till 1981 and regrouped in 1998 and again in 2007 for reunion concerts. Thanks for tuning in to The Arts Edge here at CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby Mountain. If you've missed any portion of my interview with Jackie Kania, please go to our website at www.cjsf.ca. Go to schedule, scroll down to The Arts Edge, where you will find the podcast for this evening's show and interview. To contact Jackie Kania, please go to trilogichypnosis.com. The spelling is trilogichypnosis.com. On our website, you can get more detail about what is hypnotherapy and how to book an appointment with Jackie. Stay tuned to Girls So Groovy. And now I leave you with one final tune. This is another song from Canadians' own Lorena McKennitt. Here we have All Souls Night. Good night, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend.
Hey, SFU! Getting money back for all your empty or refundable bottles and cans just got a lot easier. Just sign up for Returned Express for free. You can bag your containers, tag the bag, and drop it through the window at the new Express and Go container in the East parking lot. Return It will count your containers and credit your refunds to your online account. Learn more at returnit.ca/SFU.
Computers, tablets, smartphones, even the smallest devices can have a huge environmental impact. The harmful materials used to make electronic devices can leak into our waterways and pollute the air we breathe. Throwing old technology in the trash could mean game over for the planet. When your old electronics die, don't just throw them away. Donate them for reuse or recycling. At Free Geek Vancouver, electronics are recycled as locally and as sustainably as possible. Free Geek provides job skills, training, internet access, and free or low-cost computers to the public. Donate your electronics to Free Geek to prevent e-waste from doing extra damage and help your old technology find its new home. To learn more about how you can...